You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by Football Stadium Prince. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City right here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
Oliver, goal!
It is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Hey, friends, you are in the right spot. This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I'm your host, John, and as always, I am joined by the Nate Morales. Nate, the end has come for part of our program where the rest of the group is trickling towards the finish. Emotions are mixed right now. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, John. I think, you know, disappointing weekend altogether, but still as has been difficult to do, I think there's still a reason to keep some optimism going into this last weekend to coming into Saturday's game and Wednesday's game to finish up the other two seasons. So still excited, still all in on the Crows. No change there. It's going to be a quick show this week, guys, as we lead into a weekend with only one match per team. But we still have some juicy nuggets to put on your plate. First of all, that futures impressive season came to an end. We'll talk about that. A first happened in Fargo for our NPSL group. That's a bummer. And the USL2 team found out that Italians who moved to Canada are good at soccer. So let's go.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So starting off with the good things. And as most all good things do come to an end at some point, whether it's a high or a low. And this year's second installment of the Futures program found that out the hard way last week when they took a heartbreaking loss to last year's national runner-up, Chicago Nation, 1-0 on a stoppage time winner off a corner kick in the 93rd minute in their round of 32 match. This year, Nate, was a tad bit different of an ending for the club's UPSL season. Last year, one step further, obviously, than this group, but last year they ran into the buzzsaw that was the New York Contour. And that game in particular really didn't see the Crows have much success in the match. However, the Futures group were in this match for periods that gave some hope that they would make a return trip to the final 16. Chicago Nation was boasting a roster that I would say the best way to sum it up very closely resembles their previous season's successful team. They came to the Land of the Lakes just cruising off their 1-0 victory over Midwest powerhouse, the Milwaukee Bavarians, a round earlier, and were poised to keep that going from the early whistle. The Futures created a good number of chances from the dangerous front three of Ramsey, Luik, and Zach Soucy, but were unable to unlock the goal they could have desperately used, to be honest. Like, getting one in the first half would have been huge. But Chicago started to feel themselves around the 25-minute mark, and then they kind of started to figure out the areas of the field that they could take advantage of and that would work in their favor, and put together a few waves of attack that tested standout goalkeeper Evan Seifkin, who was equal to the challenge on the day. I think his efforts were really the spot that you can look at that was able to keep this game level going into the break. And it really did leave the coaching staff and the players, I think, a lot of issues to fix in order to pull off that win with only 45 minutes left in the match or it's go home time.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about 0-0 at the half, John, and you think about last year getting rolled by the Contour, it's a lot different, right? This team still able to impress, still able to show that they are at the exact level they need to be. And I also find it interesting that the front three happen to also be USL2 players.
They're still future. Hey, they were all futures players.
Still futures rostered. Yep. I mean, they all started the season with the Futures. How amazing is that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the second half, the boys fought hard, but they faced like more waves of attack from Chicago and were unable to really get anything going other than setting up shop on their own half, looking to withstand all the chances and then potentially hit on the counter with that dynamic three. Ramsey actually had to be removed for an injury. I think it's just a culmination of miles on the legs. And we saw him, you know, get injured in that last match of the regular season. I think it was something that's kind of just been continuing. So he did have to make way. So the game was kind of just that, like set up shop, try to hit on the counter. If that doesn't work, let's go into overtime, potentially penalties. We've had some success there until Nate, 3 minutes into stoppage time off a Chicago Nation corner kick that saw Evan Siefkin get picked by like a crowd of players. I mean, he's a large dude, but there was like three bodies in his way and he couldn't clear the wake. And it basically was a situation where because of that, and I think it was obviously a design play by Chicago Nation. There was some less than desirable marking by the Crows, I think due to the players just kind of being out of gas. And two players for Chicago Nation were free back posts. And there was really nothing the big man from Lakeville could do to thwart off a free back post header. And the ball was able to trickle over the end line. So after one final push forward, the game came to a close, and this year's season for the Futures ended, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna plan on doing a deep dive later, but I mean, think as far as this game goes, it sounds like the standout performer is the writing is on the wall. From what you said, the guy kept us in the game the whole time, and if it wasn't for a well drawn up play, who knows, this game could have gone into even more extra time, maybe extra periods and some penalties.
Yeah. I mean, it really could have. I mean, no disrespect to the Futures group, but Chicago Nation was pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
And we knew that going into the season, right? We saw it last year that like, yeah, our conference is a little bit weird, you know, UPSL things that happen weekly. But, you know, I thought that it was a little bit more competitive of a season. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, FC Minneapolis is always kind of there. You have Vlora who leveled up. Granite City, a little bit of a disappointment, and there's kind of the rest. And then you saw
the Young Stars, Dakota
Young Stars. You saw Austin Villa, the expansion team, come in and do some things. So, by and large, we knew that if we get into these rounds, that there's a likely chance that that we're going to run into really talented teams.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we saw last year. So but as far as standout performers go, I think it points to one player. It's Evan Siefkin. I think that I mean, all season long, he's stood huge in goal. He's kept us in close games, penalty kick heroics, making saves, and really just kind of put a decent stamp on the season for himself.
Interesting what you also pointed out too, that like once we get to this level, we know the quality that we're going to run into. We ran into it last year, Chicago Nation, like you said, kind of a system team, same kind of players, same kind of attack and defense this year as they had last year. Like, I'm finding it to be true across all these lower leagues is that, you know, you've got like half of your local division or conference or whatever the heck they end up calling it that like can't really pull it together. And then the other half actually tries. And that's good because that gets you ready for like the half in the country that try even harder.
Right, right. And like being that like the UPSL is we'll just call it different than most leagues at this level. The parity is just so different across anywhere outside of the state of Minnesota, which is like super interesting to me, right? I mean, you have like the New York Contours and the Chicago Nations, and you know, you get out west and the NPSL out west is kind of garbage, and the UPSL is really where it's at, which is interesting to me. But yeah, you get into this and you get, you know, t- teams that used to be full professional that moved collectively into another group. And then, that's what you face. And this year's installment was 17, 18, 19 year olds facing off against players that are in their mid to late 20s that are, 2 years maybe into playing together. And that's really tough. But it's all so good for this group.
Oh, for sure. We're going to take a full deep dive into what has been an impressive season for the UPSL squad, for the mini murder. But for now, we'll leave it at this, a strong season. Honestly, got farther and did better than I think either of us could have expected. But
as much needed this year.
Yeah, but it was exactly what I was going to say. But the UPSL squad has been a needed injection of success and hope into what otherwise would be a pretty disappointing season for the club as a whole. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So for the senior group, there's not a lot to say about their trip to Fargo. They came away with a 3-2 loss that
that was my bad on the notes. 3-1 loss.
No, I actually checked in the game report.
It was
3-2.
Mm-hmm. Who scored the second goal?
Cole.
Oh, okay. Well, cool.
we were busy swearing at Canadians when the second goal got scored.
Okay, got it. Never mind. My bad.
So that 3-2 loss painted a similar picture that this group has been putting up on the wall most of the season. You give up that early goal, you level shortly thereafter, only to create, only to fall victim to some bad mistakes that lead to goals that were avoidable. And then you spend the rest of the game chasing, really trying hard to get back into the match, and then the clock is against you.
Yeah, and one thing to note, Nate, that we kind of touched on in the beginning of the show was that this was a first for us as a group, that we've never lost twice to these guys.
Yeah.
And so that sucks. So there's that. But all you can say about this one is I'll note this, that Fusion were coming into this match riding really high off a 3-1 win the previous match versus Duluth FC. That's a big win.
Yeah.
I know it was at home, and I know there's that travel. Duluth to Fargo sucks. That travel is that probably isn't that, is that the, that's the furthest for them, right? But regardless, Duluth is a quality side, and they've shown it outside of the match we beat them at home, where we know why that happened. But it's just signs that this group has leveled up to the closest thing to the Jade Johnson era, when the club made it to the Final Four in the NPSL off of his Golden Boot season. But regardless of this result, it's good to see that really across the board, to me, the North Conference has gotten better. And it just sucks that it happened this year when we had to fracture our talent across two leagues. When with our top players, when we put them together, and this is no disrespect to the players that go up there, they played really well, but it was a futures heavy roster. Mm-hmm. It was a midweek trip. That one's always tough. But when we put our top players together and they play together long enough and get that cohesion, we showed what we can do, and it's much better. And yeah, that's just saying it like it is. And like I said, no disrespect to the guys that went up there, but you expect to do more against a team like that, even on the rise.
Yeah, and the story with this game, John, is like we teased, I mean, Mutu, futures player, comes out and scores the equalizer after City gave up an early goal within the first 10 minutes. 20 minutes later, so Mutu equalizes, and then the hits just keep the hits start coming from Minneapolis City. Two own goals.
Yeah.
In the first half. We were down 3-1 going into the second half, and it was just like you said, a scramble to find the net, no matter who was out there.
Yeah.
And it ended up to be Cole Schwartz that got that second goal in the 66th minute, but we could not find the equalizer. To be fair, like you said, a futures heavy roster, Luke Lindsay, Matt Gibbons back from Germany for a couple games, helping us out.
I'm looking at the roster right now.
Jonathan Bear, Alvaro, yeah, Arce,
Mutu, Baraka Tarlington,
yep, Szczesinski.
Carlos Robles. I mean, you're you look at who's your who's your core then? And it, that's been there. It's Troy, Ba, Samuel, Ayo, and Cole. And then, you know, a cameo from Justin Oliver, who was a late season ad. So it's like this, that's a talented team, to be honest with you. But have they played together before much? Not really. So it's just tough, man. It's tough. And to fight for that 3-2 and really throw the kitchen sink at them in the second half, and from everything we've heard from Coach Campoverde and reading Kyle Wyeson's recap on it, they were the better team in the second half. And it just sucks that the first half happens with all the mistakes, and then now you have to fight back. But it's over. What do we have next?
Well, we've got our final home game on Saturday against Joy of the People, Joy Athletic. Joy, you know, John, has been a team that's also been up and down this year, getting blown out of the water twice by the likes of La Crosse Aris, but competing pretty well against Twin Stars, against Dakota, and some of these other middle-of-the-table teams. So it really is a battle of middle-of-the-table teams for maybe some self-respect in this NPSL North. And then Minneapolis City will wrap up their NPSL season next Wednesday in La Crosse against Aris. One thing we did miss, John, is, and we kind of talked him up, obviously the first goal scorer, who are the guys that you looked for as stand-up performers in this game that might be able to contribute potentially in this Joy Athletic game now that we've got use of this UPSL roster?
Well, first and foremost, I want to give a shout out to Matt Gibbons. So this was, you know, Matt Gibbons' season last year, and I think that he was the missing piece that I would have potentially put us over Cleveland. He had a nasty muscle injury, like a hamstring injury in preseason that, like, he was just buzzing in preseason. I think he scored 3 goals in the preseason last year, then got hurt and was out the entire year. And Matt Gibbons is that type of player who, he doesn't look like much, you know, he's in shape, but looks out of shape, you know, if that makes sense. But he's
Vinny Bell knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, until he ran into Jonah. But Matt's that player who we kind of miss, who's that, like, fuck you, I'm going to take this game over and I'm going to make everyone better. And I'm going to get after guys that aren't performing, and I'm going to show by example. And that happened on the second goal. Now I'm remembering, right? That happened on the second goal where he, you know, he just took the ball and was like, you know, just created his own chance, and was able to find his college teammate, Cole Schwartz, former college teammate, for that second goal. But like, it just stinks that he's on his holiday from his German squad, that we could have used that this season for sure. And I think at the USL2 level as well. But the second performer, and we talked about him, you know, from a futures perspective, is Mutu. And the reason why I think it's not only because he scored the goal, but we talked about like the call-ups and the differences between the players. And Mutu was kind of the guy that, outside of the Ramseys, the Weeks, you know, even, you know, the Siefkins, he was the guy that carried the UPSL team. And we mentioned that, like, with him, it was always like a, you're almost there, but there's the other thing that you need to clean up to move it up a level. And now seeing that, you know, maybe he heard us, but he moved up into that senior squad and performed in his first match, scored a really crucial goal that was much needed to kind of stop the bleeding and get any sort of momentum back. So really good to see that. And I'm really excited to see him hopefully, you know, get eyes on this in the last match of the season, if he does make the roster against Joy.
Yeah. One thing to mention on Matt Gibbons too, is he also, not only on field is maybe has he brought something that the team has been missing, but even as a guy that, like myself, that doesn't go to the trainings, that doesn't observe trainings, you know, he's still that locker room personality, that charisma in the locker room that they need. You can see it in warmups when he shows up and he's working just as hard as everyone else, but he's having fun. He's goofing around. It's like,
well, you saw it in the Sevens League during COVID. Like, yep. His team won because of how serious he took it, you know?
Yep. So a nice balance there of team building and charisma and some lightheartedness, but also some discipline and, like you said, the ability to hold your teammates accountable. So hopefully you have Matt for one more weekend. I'll tell you what.
That would be great. One more match. Stick around.
So City kicks off against Joy Athletic at 6 p.m. on Saturday,
early one.
July 9th. It's an early game, and you know, it's going to be a good one because it's a crosstown rivalry. Those Joy parents, they travel.
That they do, and they're never quiet.
John, in keeping with the this is going to be a quick show. Next up for the senior group was a home date. It was midweek versus a Thunder Bay Chill squad that have been able to fight quite well up against that we were able to fight quite well against in Canada a few weeks ago, playing to a 1-0 loss. What were your thoughts going into this one? This felt winnable to me.
It did feel winnable. They were coming off playing a lot of soccer.
And the night before, again, right? Another one of those Canadian teams where, like, the night before, they're in St. Croix.
Yeah, like, what the heck? but, I mean, I was looking at this one as, like, I had a good feeling about it. And I did because of how we finished off the Manitoba game. And it was like, that fire is there. The anger at how the season is going is there, and we're able in some points to take it out on the other team, but it's always a little too late in the game. But then it's like, okay, well, can we bottle that and go at the next group that's in front of us? So I had a lot of optimism going into it. So, but let's talk about how that quickly fell apart.
Yeah, I mean, as far as this match, the group came out in that 3-4-3 formation that you and I have not been excited about. We've seen it get picked apart by the talent level at, you know, the UPSL or the USL2, I'm sorry, has put on the fields from team to team. And those same issues that we identified presented themselves early. Bad giveaway in a dangerous part of the middle of the field, and a direct ball was placed into space behind the back line. It was just you talk about quick counter.
Like, so
it was one bad pass and they were gone off to the races. Really nice run by Andrea De Vincenzi in what was the fourth minute, created some hustle, but some nice counter hustle by Murakami, and a nice save coming off his line by Mattis Castillo. We were able to erase the damage in the fourth minute, but it happened in the eighth again. And this time we couldn't catch up. He had the defender beat. He was one-on-one with Mattis Castillo, and your head goes in your hands, your heart goes in your stomach, and you know, like, there's a really good chance we're getting scored on here. He had no help from his back line. So there's another early goal in the first 10 minutes of play. Yeah, but I'm going to say, John, City responded really well after that punch in the face. They got their shit together after the first 10 minutes, and it stayed 1-0 all the way until the half. We were trying to unlock their defense. They were trying to do the same thing, but they were trying to do that same move over and over again, but we had it figured out for the most part. Stayed that way until the half when the visitors were accidentally locked out of their changing room. So that's why we added another 5 minutes onto the halftime break. But I would say after, besides, like I said, in true City fashion, in the same story we've told all season, except for those 4 minutes, that was a great 45 minutes.
And I'll say this, there are two things for me. Number one, we've gone up against a lot of great players in the USL2 this year. I mean, the Des Moines Menace are just packed with them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's some of the players from Peoria, a few that we saw from Manitoba. But Andre DiVincenzi is fucking good at soccer. Like, that guy, and we talked about on the broadcast too, it was like his finishing wasn't top level. I mean, he comes from a professional U19 side in Italy. But for me, the reason why he's not continuing in Italy and he's here was his finishing, to be honest. everything else was so good and so sharp. Like his off the ball movement and how he varied up what his movement was and understanding his trigger of when to make those runs was like it, that's like what you see in a top level professional soccer from a striker. So that one, the other thing for Thunder Bay was I also noted on the broadcast that this team is well drilled. Like every player on their roster knew their job and knew exactly, and not necessarily like to start the game or even into later parts of the first half, was figuring out what to do against us from what we were giving them. It was more so how they do their job well. And it was, you know, for a soccer purist, it was a joy to watch. Like every time they got the ball, I'm watching the movement and I was like, man, like DiVincenzi's making the first run or, you know, the other players around him are hitting the second and third run. And the central midfield, once they got it in those danger spots we talked about, it immediately was going to a space on the field where they just knew a guy was going to be.
Yeah.
And we just don't have that.
That's true. But I will say that Minneapolis City, upon recognizing that there were some really good players out there, I think there were some tactical changes that I agreed with, and the players personally stepped it up as well. I think moving Murakami in to the center back pairing with Jonah so that those two guys, the two faster defenders, were responsible for marking like a DiVincenzi run, I think was a great move. You know, Eric Bloom then ends up going out and swapping with Murakami, which, you know, was fine. He all of a sudden he's like super far up the field, and it took me a second to realize like, oh, he's supposed to be there. He's not just on an adventure.
he's not catching a nosebleed.
But also in that first half, Loic was still causing fits for the defense almost on his own. For a little guy, he was able to position his body in a way and fight his defenders off the ball in a way that I just would not have expected against some of these larger Canadian / Italian chillers.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I have nothing else to add.
coming out of the break, John, I think City could have made some additional tactical changes. I think leaving Eric Bloom on that wingback position left some vulnerability. We could have made an immediate switch there that put some more pressure on Thunder Bay, but City was still able to level that pressure up in the first half of the second half. The Crows looked to be the better team again. Loic causing trouble, Susie helping him out up there. Looked like a tired Thunder Bay squad, but you know, City efforts came up with nothing. We just couldn't unlock that offensive something, right? It felt like we just couldn't get started sometimes. And when Loic did find himself with the ball, he was mobbed. So John, I mean, why do we keep doing this? Like, we don't kick it into gear until we're desperate. It's the same thing. Like we tried. It's almost like, why not try as hard as you can right away?
Well, I think they did. I thought we did the first 4 minutes of the game, like, were just such a microcosm of the season. We actually did start out strong, and I thought we created multiple chances in the first 3 minutes, and then we just had that one breakdown that causes all the problems. And we talked about it time and time again. It's like, yeah, but, and the but is always usually a goal, and then, then we have to claw back. I thought that, you know, in Kyle's post-game interviews with Loic, Aiden and Coach Matt Van Benskoten, they all said the same thing. Like, we keep doing this to ourselves, and like, it can't happen. But what, you know, the question you pose is, what do we do to change that? And for me, it's a couple things. It's easy to say. Let me start with that. But it's less easy to do. I think we started it with the tactical adjustment of moving Murakami into the middle of the back line, but. Mm-hmm. With that change, like, what about the changes in front of that back line? Because to me, it's where those plays start. And it starts from an overloaded midfield. Like with the 3-4-3 formation, we find ourselves at a disadvantage in the middle. And I thought player to watch on the day, Jameson Charles, his energy was how we combat that. But we were constantly overloaded with two versus three in the middle. And then he and Aiden have to decide which one's going and which one's staying. And oftentimes both of them had to go or both of them had to stay. And it just creates a level of not needed second guessing and kind of confusion in there that we need to figure that out. And I don't know if it's a personnel thing or if it's the 3-4-3 formation does work, but you know, maybe it just doesn't work for us when it comes to some of these players having that plus level of skill to be able to do something small to unlock it very easily. And it could just be like not having the time to drill it in. I mean, maybe the 3-4-3 is what we should have started with in the season, but if the 4-3-3 was our problem and that was what we were seeing all of these counterattacks and direct balls coming from, the 3-4-3 might not be the way to counter that because of the fact that it's actually adding more direct pressure if something breaks down. So I think that like we started making the adjustments with the Murakami switch. We should have maybe continued that forward. Yep. And I think that with Loic and what he was doing alone up there, you could have put him by himself up there and moved to maybe a 4-1-4-1 where you have a dedicated player that's sitting in front of that back line. And maybe it's Charles, maybe it's someone different. That player is fronting the attackers so that if they need to drop in, there's a body there. And then you have the two players in front of them that are clogging up the rest of the stuff so that those entry balls can't happen. So yeah,
it felt like a good move eventually to put Tyler David in that kind of a role, right? You know, sitting that he feels well suited for that. And then if Jameson Charles still has gas, right, he's the guy that can go box to box and be just as threatening, you know, with his passing as he is on defense. But I think you're right. You know, two guys going forward leaves us wide open for a counter. So you don't want to do that. Those two midfielders sitting back means that you've basically got four attackers standing on the back line of Thunder Bay with nobody giving the ball.
Mm-hmm. And so, your attack's coming from traditional outside defenders.
Right. And then if you don't have any options, there's no one in midfield as like a safety valve, right? To be able to just drop it back, reset, cycle it, see what else you can do with it. It's just like, well, one of those guys couldn't do anything with it. So now the other three are out of the equation.
Yeah. And you know, it's, you know, I go back to what I just said, and I think that it's more of a, like, we haven't had enough time to properly, and I'm not saying I say this with fully understanding that we have been training this, but it takes more time to perfect the system. And perhaps sticking with the 4-3-3, yeah, it might have still created the same types of problems we were having with it in the beginning of the season. But maybe sticking with it and not trying to change it up was a better way to go about it, or looking at something a little bit different that clogs up the areas where we seem to time and time again get beat.
Sure. Well, after a few subs, John, the few subs that were made in the second half, it seemed to be a mixture of either too late or maybe a head scratcher as far as why certain people were brought on. But the Crows kept doing all they could to level this one until the 80th minute, when a mismatch on that left side saw, you know, Susi has to track back 70 yards to try to cover an unmarked man. This is what we were talking about. If your midfielders are too far forward, if you're caught on the counter, it's up to someone like Zach to sprint as hard as he can back to cover an unmarked man after the Thunder Bay chill switched the field really deftly. And he just didn't have enough time to close down that attacker who, what's that?
Give him that. He tried. We'll give him that.
Yep. But, you know, that attacker was able to slice the ball into an unmarked Daniel Bricker, and the game was 2-0. But some positive here, the Crows were able to pull back in stoppage time on some fancy play, which saw Loic Massanvi turn on his defender and kind of scoop a nice pass to Sydney Toome moving in at full speed in the middle of the box, who hit it on the full volley, really just a no-doubter past that chill keeper. And the Crows had some life, but too little too late, put it on a t-shirt once again, and our winless season continues into our final game of the season, which is next Friday, July 15th, versus our in-state rivals, St. Croix Legends. That's a home game, 7 p.m. kickoff.
Yeah, and for me, if we're talking about standout performers, I don't think that there was anyone that like from end to end was like, yep, they're our guy on the day, outside of what I saw Loic do. Mm-hmm. And what Loic did as an 18-year-old was anytime he got the ball, he tried to create something. And oftentimes it was on his own. And I would say in going on his own, he did everything but create the final finishing chance. He turned defenders inside out, oftentimes two and three at a given crack, where he was just slipping through, turning guys, even his hold up play, his movement off the ball. I thought it outside of all the goals he scored this summer was probably his best performance.
Yeah. I mean, great night for him to do it too. I think there were some influential people in the audience, yep, that might have been interested to see him succeed and score a couple goals, but I think he's still that assist, and his individual effort was definitely noticeable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you for listening to this week's show, and thank you to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. If you're in the market for some supremely curated, soccer-focused graphic design, anything from mugs to t-shirts, you can celebrate the Minneapolis City season. You can get ready for the beginning of your favorite Premier League club's season starting next month. Man, I can't believe it's going to start in August already.
New kit launch.
Yeah.
Coming out this weekend.
Yep. You can head over to footballstadiumprints.com. You fill your card up. And we gotta mention that. Don't forget to use the code CROWS10 for 10% off on everything that you purchase. And remember, all those U.S. orders ship here from within the United States, so no international shipping charges. To what you mentioned, John, new kit launch is this weekend. At the game on Saturday, Minneapolis City will reveal the Heritage Waters kit, the new mystery kit on the season. There is still time. Only 100 will be made and available to fans. Still time to pre-order yours, and you can pick it up at the stadium when the players will be revealing it and wearing it live in front of your faces. So head on over to mplscitysc.com, check out the club shop, and order your Heritage Waters kit. As a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3, so consider beefing up that tax deduction ahead of next year through a charitable gift to the club. And remember, if you want to get a hold of us, it is easy. You can hit that club up on Twitter at mplscitysc, or you can talk to us at the show at The People's Pitch, or you can email us, mcscpodcast@gmail.com. And that is all for this week. I am Nate. That was John. There are 3 matches left in this very interesting season, so come on out and support the boys as they try to end the year on the highest note possible without ending the season with another hoof.
Don't get hooked.